The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains seriously ill this morning after being admitted to the intensive care unit of a London hospital. Mr. Johnson had been diagnosed with the coronavirus 10 days ago and was taken to hospital on Sunday night, suffering from persistent symptoms of the disease, including a cough and a high temperature. Speculation about the severity of his illness had intensified after the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab said he hadn't spoken to him in 2 days. Last night, the Taoiseach said the British Prime Minister was in his thoughts and that he wished him a speedy recovery. A short time ago, the Cabinet Office Minister, Michael Gove, explained how decisions will be made in Mr. Johnson's absence.
We meet collectively every morning at around 9:15. Normally it's the Prime Minister who chairs, but yesterday and today it will be Dominic Raab who chairs a meeting in which ministers are brought together and officials and also the government's chief medical officer and chief scientific advisor. And then we review the work that needs to go on in order to support the NHS, in order to keep public services going, in order to keep our economy in a strong position. Well, so far we've proceeded completely by consensus, and we do so in a team way. Members of the Cabinet, following the scientific advice and the medical advice that we receive, the decision-making process, of course, is that the Cabinet is the supreme decision-making body.
And that was Michael Gove speaking to the BBC this morning. Joining us now on the line is Dr. Andrew Blick, who's the director of the Centre for British Politics and Government at King's College London. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a really unusual situation. Not only is the Prime Minister very unwell, but he's had to hand over power at a time of national crisis.
Yes, indeed. I mean, this kind of thing doesn't come along very often. And it's complicated a bit further in the UK in that we don't really have specific arrangements for how to handle this kind of instance where the Prime Minister is incapacitated, is unavailable. In perhaps in other systems, there might be a specific deputy Prime Minister or Vice President or equivalent. We don't have that. We sometimes have people who are called Deputy Prime Minister, but exactly what that role is can vary greatly, and there's no actual requirement to have one. So yes, it is an unusual circumstance that we don't have a clear, prearranged way of dealing with.
Right, as you say, officially there isn't a Deputy Prime Minister. So what then is Dominic Raab's role? Because we're told that he's now in charge.
Yeah, well, my understanding is he's taking over as necessary. So he's not become the Prime Minister. He's not acting Prime Minister, and we don't have such a thing as acting Prime Minister. I mean, historically, it's not that unusual to have someone else chairing cabinet meetings. I mean, during the Second World War, for instance, when Winston Churchill was away on diplomatic matters, Clement Attlee, the Deputy Prime Minister from the Labour Party in his coalition government, often chaired cabinet meetings. So this can go on, and there's nothing constitutionally particularly extraordinary about that. But I suppose a bigger question is, yes, cabinet can function collectively, and we do have a principle of collective government, but ultimately there is a reason there is a Prime Minister, and there may be decisions that need to get taken, or somebody may need to take a lead, and then the question arises, who is the person who does that?
Like many, many countries, including our own, Britain had already been reeling from the impact of the virus. Are serious decisions likely to be taken in Mr. Johnson's absence?
They're going to need to be. I mean, you know, decisions will have to be made, and they'll have to be made somehow. Now, as Michael Gove was saying, so far they've been able to proceed by consensus and following the advice. But if some kind of decision point comes up further down the line, it may not. But let's face it, none of us knows what is coming, what the data might start telling us about countries who are further down the line with the infection than us, etc., etc. At some point, decisions may need to be taken, and it may be that a consensus isn't as easy to reach over them. It may be that somebody needs to come forward. Now, that's where I suppose the job of the Prime Minister comes in, that decisions are taken collectively, but the Prime Minister can sometimes set the agenda or push things in a particular direction. Now, who's going to do that if that time comes? We don't know yet. With a bit of luck, maybe the Prime Minister will be back in action by that point and able to fill that role.
I see that Michael Gove has also been saying this morning that the direct quote is, no one is talking in terms of a national government. And yet, despite the fact that the Conservatives have such a massive majority, there has been talk in recent days of a unity government. Why so?
Well, I suppose that there's a tradition in the UK, although often we don't have coalition governments, partly because our electoral system, we have had them, after all, we had one from 2010 to 2015. Now, in times of extreme national emergency, most obviously the two world wars, but also the economic slump in 1931, in those situations, coalition governments have been put together. And if we look at the instance of the Second World War, the most recent case of a national emergency government as opposed to the coalition of 2010, the Conservatives had a big majority in Parliament, bigger than the one they've got now. So mathematically, they didn't need a coalition. However, they decided that politically, and to get the kind of social consensus that was needed around the difficult measures that needed to be taken, they needed to put together a coalition government, and that's what they did. So maybe no one in the government's talking about it, but people are talking about it. People like me are talking about it and thinking about it. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. And we should also bear in mind that there's been a shift in the main opposition party over the last few days, and they've got, you know, a different kind of leadership that is perhaps a lot more centrist than the previous one, which you could argue is more suited to going into some kind of coalition anyway.
Dr. Andrew Blick, thank you for joining us this morning. It's 8:27.